Hey everybody, welcome back to the Percy Jackson Son of Poseidon podcast. This is part two of the review for Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Last Olympian. So we left off the book in the middle of the Battle of New York, just after Annabeth gets hurt by Ethan. So Percy then has a dream about Nico trying to resurrect his mother, but Bianca, her spirit, stops him instead, and then we get a vision of what really happened to Nico and Bianca as kids, as well as his mom and Hades and everything. So I really like that we finally get answers of to Nico's past. And so we see Nico's mom, Maria D'Angelo. She's arguing with Hades in a hotel, you know, about keeping the kids safe during World War II because of the prophecy about a child of the Big Three. You know, Zeus is, you know, really angry and everything. And so Hades wants to keep the children safe by, you know, sending them off to the Lotus Hotel, but Maria thinks they're safer as a family. And, you know, it's unfortunate because then Zeus blows up that hotel, and instead of killing the kids, he ends up killing Maria, which obviously infuriates Hades. And so, you know, Hades then has the Fury Electo wipe the kids' memories and hide them away in the Lotus Hotel. And then out of anger, Hades then destroys and curses the spirit of the Oracle, you know, which is why the Oracle of Delphi is a shriveled old mummy instead of a living girl. So I kind of like that we get an explanation for the history of the spirit of Delphi also. And then Percy then dreams of Rachel as she encourages parents to leave their vacation and head back to Manhattan. So I really do like getting to see the history of Hades and his children and everything, and how kind of tragic it was that Maria had to die, you know, as a result of this prophecy. So that's really sad, and you understand, you know, the motivations of Hades and Nico as well. And so I do like that we get that. And then when Percy wakes up, he is met by the Titan Prometheus, who is trying to negotiate a surrender. Prometheus working for Kronos. And when Percy refuses Prometheus gives Percy the Pandora's box, which, you know, was open, but now the last thing that it contains is the spirit of hope. And he tells Percy, you know, when you're ready to surrender, open the box. You know, the spirit of hope will be, you know, lifted. And then in a dream vision that Percy has, you know, Percy learns what really happened to Luke's mom. And so she had the gift of sight, and insisted to Hermes that she try to take on the spirit of the Oracle. But because of Hades' curse, the attempt backfires at her, and that's why she's sort of lost in her mind, while she sometimes has these visions, but then also doesn't really make sense of anything. It's because of the curse of Hades. And so it's a nice glimpse into Luke's parents before, you know, she lost her mind, and it really makes a tragic story out of her. And you really feel bad for Luke, and then you feel bad for Hermes as well, because he tried to talk her out of it. And, you know, he sort of feels responsible now for this whole path that Luke has been on because of those choices that, you know, were made. And so it does really give a lot of good. This book does a good job giving the backstory of Luke that we really needed. I just think it came a little too late in the last book. We should have got it a book or two ago to really kind of help flesh out Luke as a character. So then Percy continues, you know, everybody's fighting the monsters throughout Manhattan and whatever, and then Chiron and the other centaurs, you know, the ones we met in the Sea of Monsters in Florida, they show up to help fight as well. And so that's kind of a really cool moment of Chiron and the centaurs getting their sort of glory moment as well. Percy then meets Aunt Rachel, who had, you know, was flown in by helicopter, and Rachel tells Percy that he is not the hero of the prophecy, which, you know, Percy is, of course, like, what? Of course I am. You know, because, and we think he would be because he's the protagonist of these books, but, you know, he's not the only hero in these books either, and so it's kind of like a little bit of a shock to him when Rachel says, you're not the hero of the prophecy. So then Kronos releases a Draken, which is kind of like a dragon, but way worse, and Rachel tells Percy that the only, you know, one that can kill the Draken is a child of Ares. And that's when the Ares campers arrive to help fight. And it's revealed that they were led by Selena Beauregard, who pretended to be Clarice, to get the Ares cabin to join in the fight. Because at the beginning of the book, they refused to fight because of negotiations that were going wrong or something. And so in the whole battle, Selena then gets injured and ultimately dies. But we find out that she was the spy for Luke. So, you know, the last couple books we've been, you know, who's the spy? Who's the spy for Luke? And it's finally revealed that it was Selena Beauregard in that. But, you know, it's an interesting little twist and surprise. But, you know, the book doesn't really do a good job justifying why she was a spy or why she didn't stop being a spy. You know, and so and her death doesn't really mean a whole lot because we didn't really get to know Selena Beauregard. You know, but her death motivates Clarice to help fight, and she is the one that defeats the Draken. And so it's a really good moment for Clarice. You know, I always like the character. I do wish we got more with her, like more action stuff with her, because I think she's badass. So it's nice that she does get to do something in this book. So after the Draken is killed, Percy, Annabeth, and Grover head to Mount Olympus, where they see Rachel in some sort of trance holding the Pandora's box. But then Percy gives the box to Hestia, because the best place to leave the temptation is in Hestia's hearth, and Hestia is the last Olympian. So I'm not really, again, sure how that all ties into the title of the book, but I feel like there's some sort of connection there. And I'm not really sure what the purpose of introducing Pandora's box is when all he does is just give it to Hestia. So, like, why introduce it at all? But then Percy gets his father Poseidon's attention and convinces him to leave the sea and come fight at Olympus. As Cronos approaches Olympus, Hades, along with Persephone, Demeter, and Nico, also arrive to help in the fight. And Cronos drops his magic spell that he had over New York, which wakes up Percy's mom and stepdad, Paul Blofus. And there's a really cool moment where his parents kind of help out in the fight a little bit, and I like that, you know, he accepts Paul Blofus as his dad and everything, and then we see, you know, them, he and Sally, you know, kind of fighting a little bit in the action. So it's kind of nice that, you know, they're not fully on the sidelines all the time in these books, so that's kind of cool. And then Percy convinces Itha Nakamura to turn against Cronos, and he does, but then he is immediately killed by Cronos. So we didn't really get to know Ethan very well, like most of these side characters, so his death doesn't really mean a whole lot. Like, his redemption doesn't mean a lot, but it's, you know, sad, kind of sad to see him go, because he could have been a cool character. And then Poseidon and his army then appear, and all of the Olympians then help fight back Typhon to the depths of Tartarus. Annabeth tries to talk to Luke inside of Cronos, and Annabeth reminds Luke of a promise that they made, and it's enough to bring Luke to the surface. And he explains that he is the only one that can kill Cronos. So Percy gives Luke Annabeth's knife, and Luke stabs himself in his weak spot, the Achilles heel from the River Styx bath, and that's how Cronos is defeated. But in the process, Luke's body is also taken away by the Fates. And that's the thread that Percy saw the Fates cutting in the first book all those years ago. So I do kind of like tying it back to that as well. And then the gods return to Olympus and offer Percy a chance to become a god, which is kind of interesting. Apparently they get a wish or something. But Percy turns it down, which I like because it's a trait of Percy that, you know, he's very humble, you know, that he is just a demigod, but it makes him more relatable. And like I said, he's, you know, he's more humble, and that he's not gonna, you know, go off and be a god and leave all of his friends behind. He does something more selfless with his wish. So instead, Percy uses the wish to force the gods to claim all of their half-blood children and those of the minor gods to be recognized at Camp Half-Blood as well, in addition to adding extra cabins at camp, including a cabin for the children of Hades. Hades does not have a cabin at the camp, but now Percy is telling them, you need to take accountability, you need to recognize all of your children, the minor gods need to recognize their children, and they should all have cabins at camp. And so it works. The gods made a promise, and they honor their promise. And the gods then assign Annabeth as the architect to redesign Olympus, which is, you know, sort of been one of her dreams as throughout these books, is that she wants to be an architect. So it's kind of bringing her character also full circle, especially since she has, you know, the laptop of Daedalus and everything, who was her, you know, hero of architecture. So that's a nice little moment for Annabeth. And then Grover gets a seat on the Council of Cloven Elders, and it's nice to see that he finally gets the respect, recognition, and credit that he deserves for finding Pan and then, you know, taking on that new role of reinvigorating, you know, the wild and everything. You know, so I do like that. We also wrap up Grover's character as well. And so the pact of the big three is then broken because the prophecy is now over. And so, I mean, who knows? Maybe Poseidon will have more children and Percy won't be the only one at the cabin anymore. So that could be kind of cool. So then Percy, Annabeth, and Nico head back to Camp Half-Blood, where Rachel decides to then take on the spirit of the Oracle. And she succeeds in becoming the new spirit of Delphi. Hades apparently drops the curse or something. And so at the end of the camp, you know, season, Rachel gives a prophecy, you know, before leaving to go off to her etiquette school or whatever that she promised to her father. So we get a sort of cliffhanger almost, like a cliffhanger prophecy of something that may happen in the future. Kind of leaves the, you know, the door open for more stories within the Percy Jackson world. I do know that, you know, there's the Hero of Olympus series. I'm not sure if that is what this prophecy is about. I haven't read those books yet. I might read them. I'm not sure yet. So that could tie into everything. So, you know, it's a good ending that wraps everything up while leaving the door open for another book. And in the end, Percy and Annabeth, they finally get to kiss. And it's kind of a sweet little moment, you know, for the two of them recognizing their feelings. And they end up jumping into the, or they, I think they get pushed into the lake or something. And they just stay at the bottom of the lake because Percy can create like an air bubble or something. And they're like making out at the bottom of the lake, which seems like a very teenage thing to do if you have that type of power. So I do kind of like that. And I like Percy and Annabeth finally admitting their feelings. And, you know, Rachel, you know, stepping to the side and letting them be together. So I do like that. And her taking on the new role as the new Oracle, that's also cool. So, you know, I like how we wrap the ending of the book. I don't necessarily love everything about this book, but we'll get to that in the next part of the book where I'll summarize the whole book as a whole and go over more of my thoughts. But that's it for this episode of the podcast. So thank you for listening and stay tuned to the final review of The Last Olympian. And the book series as a whole as well. So thank you all for listening. This has been the Percy Jackson Son of Poseidon podcast. Bye.